This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Wentworth Kings Meadow, the show that follows a team that has been cheated out of a place at the UEFA Women's Champions League final. After the historic win away in the first leg, Chelsea welcomed UEFA Lona to a record attendance at Stamford Bridge, knowing a draw was enough to see them through. Chelsea without Mayra Ramirez found it difficult to get the ball up the pitch without it coming straight back. A deflected and into Bonratti goal levelled the tie after 25 minutes. But it was Chelsea who had the better chances to go in front, with Leupolz guilty of misplacing the final pass and firing over from close range. Bonratti had spent the week talking up the referee after being disappointed with the strict officiating of Stephanie Frappart in the first leg, and it worked. Kadisha Buchanan showed a second yellow card despite winning the ball on the hour mark, and then 15 minutes later gave a penalty despite it being Bonratti who had kicked Ashley Lawrence's leg, not the other way around. The video of referee Demetruski, maybe, don't know, apparently smirking told the story of the game. However, I am proud of all our players. They gave everything. We just didn't give the referee enough money. Emma Hayes said it on the touchline, "I feel robbed, and it's a feeling shared." Her final game at Stamford Bridge and her final farewell might not have gone the way we planned. But if there is a shred of comfort, it has to be that the so-called greatest team in the world needed to cheat their way to victory against us. And the title of tonight's show is Wentworth Kings Meadow, episode number 134, is Chelsea 1, UEFA Lona 2. which shows you how I feel about everything that went on. I'm your host, Dean, of course, joined by Mr. Dane Whittle. Dane, how are you doing?
Well, having to go through what we all viewed on Saturday again is going to be hard, but yeah, apart from that, I suppose I'm all right.
Yep, so Bonratti and UEFA Lona were the only two terms that allowed this evening for those. One the team and one the player. We're also joined by Mr. Matt Ball. Matt, good to see you, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not at the best day, so coming on to this, it's going to be a bit... I'm going to try and keep myself nice and PC, because I do not want to say anything controversial. But apart from that, it's good. Just a shame we're not in the final.
It is, especially the way we ended up losing the game. Now, remember, we do record live every Tuesday and the occasional Friday at about 8 p.m. Or whenever Dane gets... on the call. That is live on Mixlr's mixlr.com. You can join in the show by posting on the live chat page as we go. And we've already got Johnny in the house tonight, so good to see you, Johnny. On the show tonight, in part one, we're looking back at the semi-final corruption. And in part two, we'll take a quick look ahead to Liverpool in the WSL tomorrow night. Before we get into that, Dane, there is a charity match coming up that you're involved in. I thought you might want to give it another little plug now.
I was just actually writing some notes down, so you caught me early. But yeah, on Saturday, I've mentioned it a couple of times before, but if everyone hasn't heard it, I'm going to repeat myself again. We're having a charity football match for this gorgeous little girl called Scarlett. In September 2020, when she was 10, her life changed while she was in the middle of the night, while she was sleeping. She had a rare cavernoma that ruptured in her spinal cord, and as a result, she lost the use of her legs. Since then, the last 4 years, she has been working really hard on her rehabilitation, but as you can imagine, the costs involved in this are very high. So with a good basis of people, friends and family around her, we've arranged a football match, which is going to be played at Sutton United's ground on the 4th of May, 3 o'clock, so that's this Saturday, and it's like a celebrity 11. You know, people close to me know my godson, and I've said it a few times, my godson is on EastEnders, but you're not allowed to advertise him as from EastEnders for this game. There's all different rules when it's charity. And he's organised quite a few of the co-stars from that famous BBC One show. And as well, we have Tubes from Soccer AM. We have Sam Saunders, an ex-professional. We have a couple of other ex-professionals. Where's the other one? Jonathan Douglas, the old Leeds and Brentford captain. We have Gladiators, Harry Kinnis, I think, aka Nitro. You know, he's a local boy. So, and we also have a reality TV star, Dan Osborne. Don't believe the press, he is actually a nice guy. And I think there's going to be a couple of more announcements on the day. So it'll be a Celebrity 11 nurses, Scarlett's dad's mates, really. Tickets are £10. Children can come. Children under 12s can come for free. And it's going to be like a big day. There's going to be like an event on afterwards, like DJs, music, food. And I think gates are at 2 o'clock, if I'm correct. But yeah, it should be a good day out. You know, quite a few tickets have sold. So come along and you're lucky enough to see me play as well.
Yeah, unless you blink, you might miss it.
But you can get the tickets are available on Sutton United website, or you can actually follow her story on Instagram, and it's at Scarlet's Journey 2020.
Yeah, we'll leave the link in the description. Can you get tickets on the day?
I don't actually know. I'll ask quickly now. I mean, I'll update you.
Interjecting when you find out that piece of news. Before I forget as well, if you are listening back to the show on Apple or Spotify, to leave us a nice 5-star review to make us feel good or warm inside. Now, as I mentioned on the show, part one, we're going to look back at the semi-final. But before that, normally, you know, Dane's the one that watches from home, gives us the TV angle. This week, it's all different because I was actually at home. And Dane was at Stamford Bridge in the Matthew Harding Lower. Dane, what was your experience like?
Yeah, it was different. I've had quite a few good experiences in the Matthew Harding Lower. None where I'm sitting next to three away supporters. It was a good view, but one where you felt more connected with the team and the fans. You know, my season ticket is on the stand in the upper tier, so you have more of a view, like a maybe TV camera view, like a corner angle view, and you see the better, you know, how the game. You can work out tactics more when you're lower down in the Matthew Harden Lower. It's different, so I that was a bit of a struggle. I thought, you know, it was a nice feel to it. I said it was a good atmosphere on, you know, down below the stands before the game. It was nice, obviously, seeing who my son sort of goes with and hangs with, you know, for the games. And obviously, you would have been there. You would have seen them as well. Saw some faces off Twitter, which, you know, I recognised. I saw Sophie, had a good chat with her. Saw some other people, but they were quite upset. So I didn't want to go up and obviously bother them by saying hello. They looked very angry indeed, rightly so. But yeah, it was a mixed emotions, put it that way.
Yeah, and Matt, obviously you've been obviously chuckling at that several times, but this game a little bit different. A sellout at Stamford Bridge, in the end just over 39,000 turning up for this one. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I was also in the Matthew Harden Lower in the corner. Nearly a restrictive view, I'd say. But it was completely different to another Stamford. And I've been to a few of the other Stamford Bridge games, and yet there you get some sort of atmosphere in certain parts and not others. But this was as close as as close as I've ever seen it to kind of your typical men's game, when actually Stamford Bridge is actually loud, because sometimes even the men's games it can be a bit quiet. But everyone seemed to be a lot more in unison. It was great atmosphere, and even to be fair, and this is the only time I'm actually going to praise Barcelona. But to be fair, their fans that were jotted about in the Matthew Harden, even they were given a bit of a good atmosphere, which was nice for the overall thing.
Yeah, UEFA alone, I must remember. Their real title. We should respect them in that sense. We're going to get on to some of the worst parts of that home fan, away fans in the home end, should I say, a bit later on. And we'll be back to get into all the action after this short interlude. Right then, Chelsea lining up for this one in the 3-5-2 formation we saw last week with Hannah Hampton in goal. A back three of Jess Carter, Khadija Buchanan, and Neve Charles. The midfield five was Johanna Rhiton-Cambridge, Erin Cuthbert, Melly Leupolz, Sjoerkan Nuskan, and Ashley Lawrence, with Lauren James and Kat Macario in attack. Emma Hayes made all of her five available substitutions, bringing on Guru Ryton for Macario in the 63rd minute. Aggie Beaver-Jones on for Leupolz in the 76th minute. And then in the 84th minute, Millie Bright, Yves Perisset, and Fran Kirby came on for Johanna Rhiton-Cambridge, Ashley Lawrence, and Lauren James. That left Ciciara Musovic, Sophie Ingle, Mara Mjelde, Jelena Cankovic, and Nathalie Björn as the unused subs. Stats wise, Chelsea with 32% to UEFA's 68, six shots on target, six shots, two on target to UEFA's 15 shots, four on target, seven fouls to UEFA's five, and one corner to UEFA's four. And then I suppose the big news was no Ramirez. Sort of knew from the start how difficult it was going to be for us to hold the ball up, which was so key in the first leg, and it proved to be, didn't it?
Yeah, she was tactically, like the whole team, tactically superb in that first leg. She run the middle, she run the channels, you know, she bullied the defenders. And we really missed that forward type player. And to have three top forwards out, you could really see, you know, a couple of times we would look up. I felt we rushed a pass to Lauren James because we would see her in space, but we had no one really running the channels. I thought Lawrence had a good game. I thought she was trying her best from a deep position, obviously, to get down, and so was Canerid. But yeah, you really do. When you're playing against such a top European team, trying to get into the final, then you really need one, a bit of luck, and two, everyone playing on top of their game. Plus, you need a freaking striker. Usually helps. And Macario was too deep. She does like to get involved more, like not the out and out striker. I do actually prefer her as a striker. She can obviously play attacking midfield or on the wing. So it'd be interesting to see her as we move forward over the years. But yeah, that was the one thing that sort of like I noticed after about 15 minutes, and then for the rest of the game, I was just berating the fact, yeah, we didn't really have an out ball.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, you know, we always knew this was going to be a difficult match, you know, with the quality that they've got. But, you know, that, you know, felt a bit back to the wall from the start for us.
Yeah, I mean, I was particularly frustrated kind of from the start in the way we were playing. I think we mentioned it in the preview of the first leg that it wasn't we didn't want to see Chelsea just sit back and invite pressure on, because eventually any team is going to break you down. You need to have an effective counter attack, an outlet, and I felt we didn't have that. I think it partially Ramirez going, and obviously, as we know, very late in the day, coming out of the squad, so there wasn't really time to prepare for that. But I also just think that the general character of the team on that day was just, we don't really need to go forward as long as we keep the ball, which was very frustrating because UEFA alone are a team that love to press. And it's very hard to keep the ball in your own half when they're doing that. So I just felt we were running into diff we're making things much more difficult for ourselves, not getting ourselves into trouble. And I thought, you can only do this for so long until Barcelona start, or UEFA alone start getting chances. But for me, it was quite I understand why it was happening, but it was just very frustrating to see, because kind of knew expected how it was going to go.
Yeah, I suppose, then the opening goal is a reflection of that, back to the wall, sort of making things difficult for ourselves, as Matt mentioned. Charles and Leopold's going for the same ball when there was no pressure, sort of left us a bit out of shape. And then, Bonratti getting that, lucky deflection that perhaps UEFA didn't get in the first leg. Things going their way, they went ours, but this time, it seemed to be on their side.
Yeah, I was trying to explain to Sophie afterwards. It was almost like we'd set up an away game at Arsenal or City, where we sort of, where we're really not successful and we end up sort of losing quite comfortably. I think Sophie meant I meant it works at home, but no, I meant away game. Sometimes we do set up and you just can tell from early on it's not going to work. It was like a catalogue of errors, wasn't it, for their first goal? And unfortunately, the three opportunities we sort of almost had to give the ball away, and Neve Charles was there or thereabouts. I think she let Buchanan sort of take over first, but maybe she should just got rid of the ball. She had Melanie in front of her, and she sort of then went to challenge to head the ball away. And obviously, she didn't look up and see Melanie right there, got in each other's way. And then she was the one who got turned sort of twice, didn't she? Shot then went in off Buchanan's like stretch. And yeah, it was just one of those things that. One of those moments where you think, uh-oh, it's unless we get lucky ourselves. And I don't even think we was lucky in the first leg as well. I thought it was tactically one of the best games we've ever played. So on point. I thought we're going to need a bit of luck today. And I still believed that parts in the game. I knew it was only ever going to be one chance we needed. But to be fair, I don't think we ever got that one, even via, if we're going to talk about the Melanie loopholes, Charles, I think that might have been brought back for running out of play, but.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, it just felt, the whole scenario for that goal felt like panic. As Dane mentioned, Buchanan with a poor clearance. It then went over to Perisic, whose header went back into play instead of out. Leupolz and Charles going for the same balls you mentioned. And then Leupolz switching off and losing Bonratti. And then that deflection, just a bit all over the place. And that wasn't the case last week. And perhaps, showed why. Barca got into the game so quickly because he wasn't at that same level.
Yeah, and I think as I said before, I think that was all part of the character of the way we were playing. And what was frustrating is I understand it a little bit more if we'd continued to play that whole game, because I could see that it's definitely more of the tactical thing of not having Ramirez. But as soon as we conceded, we started attacking going forward, and it's like, well, why didn't you go a little bit with this more in the first half? Before the goal, it was just very frustrating. As I said, I kind of thought this was going to happen at some point. I did, funny enough, think it was going to come from a Buchanan pass because I thought she was out of the lot, kind of the most uncomfortable with the press throughout the game. But yeah, just an all round frustrating goal to concede, particularly the person that scored it. Cannot stand her, but that is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, although Dane, I thought we did, as Matt mentioned, we responded pretty well. Macario had a good left foot volley shot that was saved. But I did feel, just on her game in general, that the game passed her by a bit, and perhaps, is worth mentioning and remembering that we had to go into this game with not just one striker out, but three. Sam Kerr, me official work for the season, and then Ramirez as well. That's a huge loss. And as you said, probably not Macario's, best attribute is holding the ball up in this sort of situation.
No, she likes to drift, you know, left, right, central. She likes to put a foot on the ball and maybe look for the forward and work off a forward. I think I said in the previous show I was on, you've seen this so much with players that have been out for so long. When they first come back, you know, a good percentage will have like enthusiasm getting them through those first couple of games, you know, where they score, look good, and you think, okay, here we go. And then they go to a bit of a lull, don't they, where they're maybe it's just the whole body getting used to that physical side of playing. In Macario's play, you know, Macario's terms now, like almost like 60 to 90 minutes. Yeah, we desperately missed a striker. I always thought, you know, we the effort that was there, the thought was there. You know, we was always looking forward, always looking to try and work certain spaces, but it just wasn't. It didn't seem like we was all on the same page. That sounds really contradicting, but it just. You just know that something's just not on. It's almost like we were stuck between a, you know, a rock and a hard place. It was, as I said, it was so tactically perfect in that first game. It almost went against us because it seemed to, okay, well, to an extent, we'll do the same. We'll let Barca have this, we'll let Barca have that, and then we'll hit them on the counter attack. I just didn't think we had the tools maybe in our disposal to execute that
Yeah, I suppose for me,
this
Matt.
time.
Yeah, for me, Matt, it was, you know, that perhaps that little bit of quality or that magic moment, you know, we saw in the first leg with Cuthbert's goal, that was missing from us, and you know, Leupold should have scored. I think it was, as Dave mentioned, offside, in the build up to that. There was another chance where, you know, James was wide open in the middle and the pass didn't find her. You know, how many times Cameron got down the right hand side and crossed to the goalkeeper, lost track. Just felt like, you know, that little magic moment, that bit of quality was missing where we needed it most. And at the end of the day, I think that was the difference.
Yeah, I think you when you're against these top teams, you don't get many chances, and you've got to do something a little bit extra to find these chances and create these chances. I just felt that there weren't as many times that we were make creating that extra moment. We were sloppy in that final third, and then when we did, there was obviously the lawyer poles one. You had a couple of times we hit the bar post, which some people go, oh, still a good chance, it's unlucky, but still off target technically, by the stats, and some of them still could have done a little bit better. And that's where I'm frustrated. While I'm very frustrated with the decisions, I'm also at the point we did have a few chances to score ourselves and potentially make some of them decisions at least not null and void. But as you said, having if you took three of Barcelona's forwards out, they'd be just as stuck as us. So when you take arguably the best striker in the world out, followed by one of the best hold up players, followed by another young striker, not to mention that your player that is on that front has been out for 2 years and has started a second game. It just doesn't. You can start understanding why these things are happening. But unfortunately, these things happen. Injuries happen, and you just have to try and manage them best you can. And obviously, it's these big games where you're going to get caught out from these things because it is fine margins, luck, and a bit of magic.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, for me, Dane, you know, the moment in the second half when Niskan slides in and it hits the post, you know, I think then I had the feeling that, you know, it wasn't gonna be our day, so it wasn't gonna get that goal that we needed, you know, to go for us winning the tie. And hopeful at that point that perhaps we could take it to extra time, and just not concede again.
Yeah, I thought she actually had a decent game. I thought, you know, in the first half she got a little bit criticised for maybe not shooting when she tried to find Lauren. I thought that was the easier ball. Maybe it's just a little bit ahead of Lauren. Lauren, you know, stretched to try and get it, and then she had that chance at a post that hit the post. I thought she was trying to break into the box, and it was just, I think it's just difficult for everyone. As Matt mentioned, you know, take those three forwards out of any team, you're going to struggle. And if you imagine starting with Sam Kerr, then bringing on like potentially a Maya and a Macario, you know, with 25 minutes to go, Barcelona will be run ragged. It's just unfortunate we didn't have these players available. But I think we still had good enough players to who could have made an impact. It just didn't. It just wasn't clicking, was it? It's as you rightly said. The effort was there, the thought was there, but balls into the box was just like catching practice, low, high, mid for Barcelona goalie. And it just like no matter how many times we huffed and puffed, it's just the house wasn't blowing down, unfortunately.
Yeah, I will say that, despite that, at the other end of the pitch, Hampton was barely tested either by Barcelona. They wasn't creating loads. But Matt, the game then changed. The ball breaking in the middle of the pitch. Buchanan clearly wins the 50-50. The ref gives a free kick and a second yellow. And I think, that is the decision which changes the outcome of this match. Chelsea going down to 10 players when they was already up against it. It changed how Barcelona felt, how they fought, how they played, changed how we felt, fought and played as well. And, looking back at that decision again, I just can't believe how bad it is.
Yeah, I mean, I was I disrupt the group chat after the game. Partially, now I'll explain myself. The person in front of me decided to stand up when the tackle was made. So from my very limited angle, from the restricted area anyway, my only logic is she's gone through the back of her. And it's kind of one of them ones. If you're on a yellow card and you're going through the back of someone, whether you've got the ball or not, you're given the referee a decision to make. I then saw the replay after I'd put in a bit of a strong worded message, and then realised no, nope, I've made a complete mug of myself. Yeah, it's an absolutely terrible decision. It's not a surprise. I straight away when I watched the replay, just thought that 2009, same club. Same semi-final of the same competition, and I've got past the point of being too angry about it because it is what it is when you play UEFA Lona, and I'm one of them people that there's teams you dislike. So obviously Chelsea, Tottenham is not a club that we like, particularly in the men's game. But if someone said to me, you could just wipe Tottenham from existence tomorrow. I still wouldn't have that. I don't have that enough hatred to go, no, I'd want to wipe them out because that is ruining a whole fan base's life, culture, whatever. UEFA Lona, I'd get rid of tomorrow and not even think about it. Wipe that club from existence. And the day they finally go bankrupt with all their financial levers they keep pulling, the day I'll have a party.
Yeah, when this corruption comes out, we'll be in the streets for sure. I mean, Dane Emma-Hayes called it the worst decision in the Champions League history. Not that I've watched every Champions League women's game, but it's got to be up there given the importance of the tie and how much it impacted the game.
Yeah, well, like Matt, my view as well was that Buchanan had gone through her. Don't give the referee that decision to make. And as she's walking off the field, I'm like, that is really stupid. Stunk tack, almost stay on your feet. As well, she was standing on her feet. Sorry, just don't put your foot in. You got to be so on point, haven't you? And then obviously, when you get home and you see it on the highlights, and you're like, God's sake. Same because I know Matt wants to wipe and why I should actually quite like Barcelona, but I'm going back years, when Chelsea wasn't in the Champions League. So you'd watch like the bigger European teams, wouldn't you? Like Milan and Juventus and Real Madrid and Barcelona. And obviously, but then we start competing with them. Obviously, you go off them quite quickly. Obviously, as we found out, I'm going back to the days of like Guardiola and Rivaldo when he played in Clivert. But yeah, it's laughable, isn't it? And the thing is, we only mentioned the worst decision, which is the penalty. It's just, I don't know. I think I'm quite naive because I don't want to believe there's corruption. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to believe that there's anyone out there who will purposely make decisions to go against someone. Having sat through the men's semi-final second leg against Barcelona. And now for women's semi-final second leg against Barcelona, you do start to question your judgment and your sunshine and daisies thought process of football, because yeah, it was not good. It was not good. Like, you haven't watched enough Women's Champions League games to say it's the worst decision in worst decisions, for example, in the Champions League, but it's definitely some of the worst decisions, probably just in the top 10 of me watching football for, 30, late 30 years, 38, 39 years.
Yeah, I've got a question about corruption coming up in a little bit, so we'll touch back on that. But Matt, I spoke about this decision changing the game, and it really did, because UEFA loaner were able to, they smelt blood. It allowed Bonrati to push up the pitch, get into pockets of space, and that's where the penalty comes from. Running in between defenders, and it was a huge ask for us to hold on anyway, even without that dodgy penalty call.
Yeah, I said to the person next to me as soon as the sending off happened, along with a few swear words, because I originally thought it was Buchanan's fault. I just I've seen enough games to know that is against these big teams, that is game over. With how talented Barcelona midfielders are, especially the English one, you. To have one man less or one woman less, you cannot control that midfield. That midfield has much more free rein to do whatever they want. These players can go out wide, they can go inside. That they'll create space from just taking it side to side, side to side. And as you said, you create that sort of space in the penalty area, and things are going to happen. It wasn't a penalty, never in a million years. The most softest thing I've ever seen. Which is ironic, then watching the men's game and seeing the our goal disallowed for that, and I'm kind of like, hang on a minute. But yeah, I just again, it's not a surprise with UEFA Lona, and it wasn't a surprise with how I predicted the match would go. I said to some person next to me, I said, I guarantee it'll be a penalty, whether it's dodgy or not. Turned out to be dodgy.
Yeah, I suppose, Dan, your view of the penalty would have been, from a distance, but watching from home, I tweeted straight away, Bonmatí kicks Lawrence's leg. There's no way they're going to give this. I thought VAR would overturn it. Lawrence asked the ref, are they checking it? And when the ref said yes, she sort of calmed down and just, I think, assumed that they wasn't going to give it. I mean, their reaction shows that, how bad it was. I just don't see how it's a penalty.
It's again, obviously being there is different. It looks like a bit of a coming together, and I just presumed that one of them had left their leg out, and then she's taken advantage of it, like players are seem to allowed to do now. They buy the penalty, don't they? And in this case, they definitely did buy the penalty, because there wasn't. Jesus Christ, yeah. Again, I was questioning, was that a sandwich or something, with the Barcelona player in between the Chelsea defenders? But it was a shocking decision how VAR are looking at that and making that decision not to overturn it or get the referee to look at the screen. It's again, and you talked earlier on in the show about how tactical Barcelona were, with mentioning the ref and mentioning Chelsea's tactics, leading up to the game. And I've seen it so many times in all sports. And where the team will start mentioning, the opposing team and ref and the tactics, and then lo and behold, the very next game they get all the decisions to go their way. It's a joke. It's not just football. I've been, I watch a hell of a lot of NBA, and it's been happening there now. It happens in American football, happens in rugby, a lot of them. It's a joke, and yeah, it's soul destroying, isn't it? Because as I said, I'm quite naive, and I like to believe that, the beauty of the game, but come on, it's questions need to be asked, but they'll be asked, but they won't be answered.
Yeah, well, I'm going to ask you, Matt. Is it corruption? How can VAR not overturn it? If you think back to the first leg, Ramirez gets kicked in the box, and that doesn't get overturned. They don't give that. The ref hasn't given it. You look at the Nusken slide on where she's about 10 yards away from Paredes, who falls on top of her, and the ref gives a free kick. Late in the game, Macario gets the ball off Kieran Walsh. That's given as a goal kick, actually. It wasn't even given as a free kick. It was given as a goal kick. It didn't even go off the pitch. It's hard looking back now not to think that something, is going on, especially given the way that, they talked up the referee in the first leg, who had a, despite that penalty on Ramirez, had a pretty good game. They leant on the ref, they put pressure on her, but there's got to be more to it than that. These decisions are too bad.
Yeah, I mean, in kind of general, not just kind of sport, but all kind of stratospheres, we've kind of these more conspiracy theories of corruption and other such means. I always talk about in modern day history when people are not exactly as intelligent as they potentially used to be. You have to be smart enough to do a whole conspiracy theory. Which is why I think most, like particularly more politics type thing, it's not that people are corrupt or anything, it's just they're just incompetent and it looks like corruption. And it's a very fine line between that. But, and it will like with football, you get people that talk about, oh, all the decisions go towards the big six, or certain clubs always say that they're campaigning against whatever. Like, we've had the campaign against Chelsea for a while. While I don't necessarily think we've there's a campaign against Chelsea individually, I do buy the fact that Barcelona do regularly get favourable decisions, and it adds to the part of now they have been caught out of paying a particular referee. Now, is this a one particular referee they've paid off? It's now come out with Barcelona itself, whether it's directly with football, indirectly, it doesn't matter. When you're starting to pay millions to referees or a referee, one, is that the only one? Two, why is that payment being made in the first place? And with this, with 2009 in particular, it's one that I'm convinced of. And that's why I have such strong feelings against this club. I mean, like Dane said earlier, obviously, I'm unfortunately young enough that 2009 was my kind of first real experience of watching Barcelona. So, wasn't the best experience in terms of watching them. But yeah, if there is one thing of corruption I would believe is that.
Yeah, I mean, when you think back to, those Chelsea men's games against Barcelona, even before 2009, the sending off of Del Horno for a tackle on Messi, that 2009 game, the handballs, the fouls in the box, this isn't just a bad referee, because they're refereeing in, UEFA's elite competition. There's got to be something to it. I just don't, I don't believe there's not, you can't be that bad, and refereeing in the Champions League, just don't, I don't buy it. Unlike unlike UEFA alone, sorry, who clearly do. I just want to bring in this comment from Johnny on Mixlr. He says, honestly, I hate the referee reminding me of the Norwegian bloke who allowed cheating UEFA alone to beat Chelsea unfairly. Why VAR didn't intervene for decisions went against us, almost if there's no one in there, and she smiled like she wanted the team who won more deserved to go through. And speaking of that, that video of the ref, if you've seen it, Dane, I don't think that she's trying not to smile. I think she's trying not to cry. I think the game was too much for her. Clearly, the Barcelona players got to her, and it felt like in that moment, she perhaps regretted, but maybe accepted a payment because what she had to do was so obvious.
It's hard. We need more context, don't we? Because the videos, I've only seen the zoomed in video on her, and I don't know, when I did see it on, I think someone did comment, this is not the time of the match where people are claiming to, and you don't know if it zooms out, if someone had said something to her and she's just like almost embarrassedly trying to shrug it off. It is hard, isn't it? It's just because you want to blame everyone and anyone that you think is connected with UEFA, as they are now clearly renamed. And yeah, it's like we're punishing ourselves because we're going around in circles, aren't we? And mentioning refs, mentioning players, and it's just, but you have to talk about it, just almost let it out of your system. but it is a sad state of affairs. It is so harsh on, a team that at one point was, we was dreaming about what this season could bring, and I think at the end we just run out of players, run out of steam, and as we've clearly stated, we just needed a bit of luck, and we didn't get that. And when you're fighting against awful decisions and a very good team, you'll come up with a loss, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, is this the difference now between the two teams? Last season, UEFA were the better team. No qualms about saying that. But this season, over two legs, they were not. The gap is well and truly closed. But they leant on those dark arts, and they found that difference that we couldn't find.
Yeah, I mean, I think what frustrated me is I think we have closed the gap. I would agree with that, but I also don't think this was vintage UEFA Lona. I think I've seen them play a lot better. And to be fair, against other teams in the Champions League, they've been not that great either. So maybe they are just. They're coming down from that peak potentially, and they need reinforcements, fresh faces in there. But I agree. I think we were on the same level to them, if not better, in certain moments. I mean, people say, "Oh, but they had more possession, they had more this." It was like, no, that's not the overall football game is more than just possession and stats and stuff like that. And I think the way we played the game in the first half, in the first leg, and even in moments of the second leg. We just were better. It showed the better class that we had, and I truly believe a fully fit team, not just with the strikers, but having a fit Millie Bright instead of Buchanan, potentially. I don't know if it'll be Bjorn or Carter, whoever. I don't think we make some of them mistakes. I think we score some of them chances, and I don't think it would matter the decisions.
Yeah, I mean, Dane, it is a bit if buts and maybes. My grandmother had wheels, she would have been a bike, if there's a famous saying goes. But I would rather lose than win like they've won, because they're horrible.
Yeah, but they won't be losing any sleep over that. They won't be losing any sleep about how they've got right under all our skins. They've been doing it for years, these sort of teams. It's win at all costs, isn't it, to an extent? And yeah, it's just, as I said, we just run out of players, we run out of luck, and you need that. And you compare, you have one of those strikers, you've got one of the top strikers in the world. I think Fisher has the potential to be a good, at a great club. Sure, good stepping stone, but you've got Mai Ramirez and Sam Kerr. Any team will struggle without them too. You got to commend the club for making the decision to bring in a Ramirez, and not like the men's team clearly struggling up front, and just don't bother bringing anyone in. We tried, but then they got injured, and we just ran out of steam. Could we have brought on Fran a little bit earlier? I still think there's something in there that could have thrived in this game. Was it the 84th minute she came on? We just needed something because there was such a big gap up front. And yeah, it was, again, we're sort of almost beating our heads against the wall, aren't we? And yeah, just at the end of the day, it just stars did not align for us.
Yeah, well, we won't talk about bringing on Millie Bright up front and then not kicking the ball up to her. We
Yeah,
won't talk about
another.
that. But Matt, I suppose it made it even worse hearing that some Chelsea fans unfortunately received sexist and racist abuse from Barcelona fans inside Stamford Bridge, made the anger even worse.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's unacceptable. And while again initially praising for some of the fans for having a good atmosphere, the individuals or group of individuals that made them sort of comments, just it's unacceptable. Shouldn't be in the game, and just should it needs to be dealt with. But I don't trust UEFA. I don't trust even the English FA's side of things. To deal with that, it'll just be swept under the carpet. Maybe a fine for Barcelona, for UEFA Lona, but probably less than the money they've paid to the refs anyway. So it won't really matter for them. I think that's the first time. I mean, I never heard any of this stuff at the game itself. I obviously heard some of the stuff after, but even just a bit of the tension even before the game. It was the first time I've ever been to a women's game and felt that tension from opposition fans. But it is what it is. And I think it needs to be sorted and stamped out of the game because we do not want this coming into the game at all.
Yeah, I mean, then you're in women's football. You know, I've sat in the West Stand and Chelsea have conceded and someone's jumped up to celebrate. And they can do that without fear of, getting their head kicked in, as they would do if there was a men's game and did the same thing. But I think, if we're going to do anything about this, the catalyst now, away fans in away ends only, home fans in the home end. If they want to have a neutral venue, if they're playing at Stamford Bridge and they want to sell more tickets, do that in the East Upper, but make it clear, you can't wear other clubs' colours sitting inside Stamford Bridge unless you're in the away end.
Yeah, obviously that's the risk you take when you put it on general sale. When just walking up to the stadium, I saw someone with an England Russo shirt on, and I thought it's a strange shirt to decide to wear to a Chelsea Barcelona game. But okay, maybe you're just a fan of football and you're coming to watch. You know what I mean? And it's in England, Chelsea, an English club, blah 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 blah. Then once in the stand, I'd like done a couple of swift turns of my head to notice that there was Barcelona shirts walking past me, and I was like. Again, I'm like, why are they in the, I didn't understand. And as I said at the very beginning of the show, I had three Barcelona fans to the left of me, scattered up behind me and to the right. And obviously, once the first goal went in, once they stood up, jumped up and cheered, then they're going to get the home fans' reactions, which is not going to be very pleasant. Like F off back, why are you in here getting the away end, this and that. It is hard. It is hard. I've been to sports events, in this country in America, and sometimes fans are sort of like mixed to an extent. And then there'll be problems, there'll be issues there. Sometimes fights can break out, or sometimes they can actually all get on and but then you hear rumours afterwards it's Arsenal fans in Barcelona shirts, which I find pretty hilarious them going out of their way. I just can't comprehend that someone could go out of their way to buy a Barcelona shirt, come all the way over to the other side of London, pay for a ticket to go into Chelsea just to cheer on Barcelona. I know what I'd spend my prefer to spend my money on if it was vice versa and I was doing that. Yeah,
I
but the way
will
that.
confirm that I did speak to two Barcelona fans who I'd noticed had an English accent. I went, "Oh, you're supporting Barcelona over an English team? Just question." And it turns out they were Arsenal fans.
There you go. So
Brilliantly insulted. And always turned around and said, "Well, thanks for spending money on Chelsea."
it's well, there you go. That answer our questions of how sad people are and how much under people's skins this Chelsea team have got. But the way the game's going forward, yeah, they really need to be careful who they're sending their tickets to. Make sure the away supporters are segregated. It makes it safer for everyone. I saw plenty of families and kids and. When people start screaming and shouting, then the kids get cuddled and pulled into them even more, and there was a few tears. So it wasn't very well policed, put it that way. But you should, wouldn't that be obvious when you put it on general sale? You've got no control who's going to buy it. You're open to it, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, when last season when UEFA Loan gave us 150 tickets, they were cancelling any tickets brought in the home end from UK addresses, so the Chelsea fans couldn't go.
But our club is now about getting the money.
Yeah, and about getting bums on seats. I don't care whose bum it is, as long as it's in a seat. If they want to build an atmosphere and encourage people, that would have been a lot of people's first Chelsea women's game. They want to encourage their people to come back. Having away supporters, even if they're not actual supporters of that club, scattered around the whole stadium isn't the way to go. If you do want to sell the tickets, use the East Upper, it's out the way. No one can really hear anything going on up there anyway. And they can't wear colours. I get people want to come and see that team. They want to see Lucy Bronze, Kira Walsh, Lionesses are, very popular. All for that, and I know opposition fans want us to lose. I don't want any English team to do well in Europe. I'm very happy that they both got knocked out in the qualifiers. They didn't even make it to the group stage, worth remembering that. Well done to Paris FC, who we beat twice. Well, just, different levels, I suppose. But there we are. Matt, not the farewell that Emma deserves, but perhaps, her walking out with her Chelsea team in front of over 39,000 people at Stamford Bridge, compared to what she walked into 12 years ago, perhaps that's a bigger moment than any trophy could ever manage, to beat.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it's a game that experience that Emma will remember for different reasons. I mean, positive and negative. Obviously, we know the negatives. We spoke about negatives, but as you said, to come out with a full Stamford Bridge, effectively. I mean, there was very minimal seats that were not had in their bums in seats, but and the I think the it wasn't even just the stadium being full, because you can fill up a stadium, but it can be no atmosphere, it can just be dull, and that kind of dampens the effect of it. But with how good the atmosphere was, I think that's a moment that Emma's not going to forget, even if the game is ruined for other reasons.
Yeah, Dane, I suppose a bit bittersweet for her. That final farewell, being a defeat in the manner it was. But what she's built here, could never be replicated by a single trophy.
Yeah, it's almost Alex Ferguson-esque from the men's game, isn't it? It would have been going out on a dream by winning obviously all the trophies available, or, and then obviously as we get knocked out of one, okay, maybe the treble, and then we get knocked out of another, okay, maybe the double, then we get knocked out of another, okay, we're just the league then. But listen, if we end up with nothing, then it's unfortunately, no one has a divine right to win anything in football, but what we've seen and what Emma has and her coaching staff has produced for this football club and the women's side of the game is what dreams are made of, and rightly should be judged over her tenure at the club and the length of stay and just the players she's produced and coached and how the game has moved on. There's probably so much we don't know that's gone on behind the scenes where she's helped develop it, and we've won lots and lots of trophies. So, for the rest of the season now, I'm not going to take it for granted. I'm going to appreciate everything. Whether the league is slipping away slowly, if it does, it does. I think we have a chance to celebrate Emma Hayes and what this team and this club has achieved, in her reign as manager. It's fantastic. We'll owe a debt for her for the rest of our footballing lives, and she can go with all our with our blessing.
Yeah, a big farewell coming this Sunday at a sold out Kings Meadow as we host Bristol City. Before that, we've got Liverpool in the WSL. Talking of a title slipping away, we're going to talk about that after the break. Before we go to the break, your plug for Kings Meadow Chronicle, your Chelsea FC Women fanzine, issue 12, the final issue of the season. Will be available by the time you're listening to this, if we're listening back. So on Wednesday, it's going to be released for sale. It is obviously heavily weighted towards Emma Hayes. The front cover is "Thank You, Emma." It's of course your final one of the season, so make sure you look out for that. If you're at the Bristol City game, pop by and buy one. If not, the link is kingsmeadowchronicle.bigcartel.com. That will be in the description box as well. They're also the subscription offer for next season is also online as well. There is a special code in issue 12. So to save a little bit of money on a subscription, buy a copy of issue 12, get the code, get your subscription, get your copy posted out every month. We'll have seven editions next season as well, covering this great team in its new era under a new manager, yet to be confirmed, but we'll see about that. And we'll be back after this short break. Welcome back then to part two of Bentamo Kings Meadow. Time now to look ahead to that Liverpool away game in the WSL. Matt, a game we must win, of course, given the situation in the league, but also we must win it well, and it's not going to be easy for us to do that.
No, I think Liverpool are a team that, of course, I think you can score goals against them, you can beat them quite well. But like, I think West Ham at times, not all the time, but at times, they can be very organised, and that they can be very hard to break down. So it's, I think it's one of the teams I didn't want to face when you're trying to score loads of goals. Obviously, we do have the fact that we do have Bristol City to play, but obviously, Man City also played for also recently played Bristol City, so it kind of not cancels it out a little bit.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. When you follow a big team like Chelsea, one of the most frustrating things is not being able to get a ticket for the match, especially when it's away and not live on TV in the UK. What can you do? Get updates from your mates? Follow online commentary? Listen to the radio? Let's face it, it's not the same as actually watching the match live, is it? NordVPN have the solution to every football supporter's match day problems when they can't watch the match live. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords. It's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across six devices. It's a bargain. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
I think now we've got nothing to lose. I think we just need to go out and score as many goals as possible. We need to be ruthless, which obviously, again, not having strikers, is hard to be ruthless. And it is frustrating, but the team have just really got to fight and go for as much as possible. Even if it's at the point of we might concede one or two, we've just got to go all out. And at least, if you're going to die on your sword, die on your sword. I'd rather you go full out, trying to get goals and get slippy at the back and lose it that way, than not really go for it and then just whimperly lose on goal difference.
Yeah, I mean, Dane, we've had Matt Beard on the show before, of course, the now Liverpool manager. One of only a few people, apart from the Hayes, to have won the WSL, of course, with Liverpool back 2013 or 14. Why do you think he doesn't get the respect he sort of deserves from the media and supporters? Because I think it's Liverpool's second season now in the WSL after their promotion. They're level on points with Manchester United, and they've invested obviously quite a lot into their team. If they beat us, they go above Man United on points. You know, but it seems to be sort of brushed aside when you're talking about, you know, the manager of the season awards and who should be up for that.
Yeah, surprise, isn't it? It's ignorance, probably, maybe. You know, it's the dog that doesn't bark loud enough compared to other managers in this league. A nice guy. We found that out on the podcast, just talking to him live or for the show and behind off camera. Appreciate what he did at Chelsea. Appreciate what he did the first time at Liverpool and the good job he's doing now. You know, a little bit more investment. It's funny because you see these teams sort of come up every year, don't you? And you think, okay, if they get a little bit more investment, they could be really good next year. They could be really good next year. No one really intends to kick in. And it's still, you know, the Man City and Chelsea and Arsenal as the top three. We've seen Man United, Tottenham, obviously Villa spent, I thought, well. Even in pre-season. But it's going to be a tough game. Agree with Matt, it's going to be one of those ones where it could either be tight, or you see Liverpool and you think, okay, that's a good result, and another time you see them lose 3-4-0. I like the attitude, you know, live by the sword you die by, which Matt was saying as well. I think it's a six goal, is it a six goal swing, or are we behind six goals?
Seven.
So, you know, that can be clawed back. Obviously it's going to be hard without a striker, but almost play with freedom, play with a what have you got to lose, do you know what I mean, attitude, just go for it. We are more than capable. We have got the talent. Don't play with the dropped sulky shoulders. You know that has gone now. Bas UEFA loan, sorry, has gone. You know, move on. You can still, it still can be a massively successful season. You know, the league, winning the league is the bread and butter. It's the one that you should always be judged on each season, and then we still got a very good chance of winning it. So, be a tough game, Liverpool away against a good manager who's unappreciated, not by us clearly. And you know, but we are more and more than capable of going there, getting 3 points, and adding to our goal difference to try and catch up City. Even if it's like, you know, we get two clear goals, that's still better than. Then nothing or one.
We haven't obviously beaten them since they've been back in the WSL at Prenton Park. Obviously, they beat us on the opening day of last season. It feels like about 10 years ago, that match that we lost. Was it 3-2?
3-1. Oh, was it? I thought it was 2-1. Sorry, no, maybe I was wrong. Sorry.
I don't know. I think they got two penalties, didn't they? That was a disaster. Hopefully not. And obviously, thanks to Man City winning 4-0 over Bristol City, they have that 6-point lead. We've obviously got the two games in hand, and the plus seven goal difference on us. So we do need
seven. Sorry, I thought it was six.
Yeah, and then Matt, when he was on the show recently, what game was it? Wrighton came on at left back. Aston Villa. We spoke about using her as an option there when we need to, you know, to break teams down and get goals. Could that be an option, you know, at wing back for this game?
I would definitely use it for this game. I mean, my predicted lineup, that is exactly what I've gone for. I think you do need to go out, and that's one of the ways to do it. Just trying to get as many attacking options on the pitch as possible without it being too chaotic. And I think Brighton's played at wing back. I think her being out wide is also her best position. So I think why not? Emma's at the point she has nothing to lose by doing it. If she doesn't win the league, I think inside she might be disappointed to go out with nothing, but she's won so much at Chelsea that Chelsea fans are not going to care if she won four titles or none, no titles, because she's been fantastic for us. And of course, we'll be disappointed to be trophyless this season, but there are circumstances that have played into part, as we've all kind of mentioned, and I think it's the start of the league new, so it is what it is. But I think just go all out and Brighton definitely at wing back.
Yeah, another player I think Dane should be in contention for this is Čankovic, who hasn't really had a look in recently. You know, Emma has preferred to bring on Frank Kirby over her, but if we're thinking, you know, we need to create a lot of chances, she's a player that you think surely she's got to start.
Yeah, she might hit those spaces that Katerina likes to come into, and that can leave Katerina like a little bit 10 yards more forward. Čankovic, you know, fit. Sophie Ingle fit. I haven't even been seeing much minutes. You know, you look at the bench against Barcelona, you obviously had Milder on there, Bjorn back from injuries. I don't know if Beaver Aggie might come in. Yeah, it's a case of, yeah, like I do like the sound of Guru at left wing back. You know, you're almost going for the kill. You know, Liverpool be wearied at the fact we are a wounded soldier. It could have a bit of a chip on our shoulder, which I hope we do. I really hope we do. You know, yeah, I'd like Čankovic. Yeah, again, either one of them can perform on the night. We just need them to, obviously, don't we? If that's your, if Matt's saying Guru, you're saying Čankovic, well, you know, I'd like to hear the rest of your teams, because who's missing out?
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a little bit. And I suppose, Matt, we are going to rely now. There's no Mero Ramirez again for tomorrow. On Lauren James to turn up, and, you know, especially, you know, given that Ramirez isn't fit, she's going to be, you know, one of the ones leading the attack that we need to rely on to turn up and have a great game, because she struggled, I think, at the weekend.
Yeah, I think I was out of everyone. It was actually, she was one of the ones that disappointed me the most, just because she was infuriating when she got the ball against UEFA Lona. It was, there was no desire to go forward. It was I'll go back, go side to side for a little bit to keep the ball. But it's like, no, you're stunts and attacks. But obviously, it's a completely different game. So I expect Lauren to be one of the players that will be most fired up. She's got a big job in her hands. I think it'd be interesting. I imagine she'll be, if we do play a wing backs, one of the two up top. Who's with her is another question. I don't know who it will be. It could be anyone. But I don't think it will be Macario just because I think she's still not fully back fit. And I think she obviously played a fair chunk in the Barcelona game. So I think that Emma will rely on someone else and maybe give Macario a little bit of a rest, which I think is correct.
Yeah, well, just before I give my lineup, then we could have Bright and or Bjorn back in the lineup, and that could be crucial for our ever tiring defence, who's have to play the four that have played have had to play a lot of minutes in recent weeks.
Wishful thinking Millie will be back in the starting 11. I know she's a beast. I know she's a machine, but I'll be asking a hell of a lot considering how long she's been out. For Bjorn, maybe. Seems a bit niggly in the last 4 to 6 weeks, doesn't it, with her? She comes back and she's gone again. So there's more chance of her. With Emma's team selections, what we've learned over the years is not to be too surprised, even though we always are. That would really surprise me. But recently I said there's no chance Katarina's going to start a game or this season, and then she started the very next game. So what the freaking hell do I know?
Well, what do we all know? Nothing. Let's give my lineup then. It is out. It's a little bit out there. It's a 3-4-3. Hampton's in goal. The back three is Perisay, Carter, and Charles. The wing backs are Kanrid and Wrighton. The midfield two are Cooper and Chankovic. James is on the left. Beaver Jones is on the right, and Macario is through the middle. Just not really sure who else we can play up front at this point. It allows James to come inside and right and to obviously overlap down the left. Same for Beaver Jones and Cameron on the right. Matt, I know you don't think Macario is going to start, but what's your selection?
So let me get it up. So I think obviously Hansen in goal. I've gone with a bit of a funny back three as well. I've gone Carter. Well, Perisay, Carter, Charles, like you, right and wing back. I've gone a little bit more safer on that side. I've put Lawrence at the wing back, but I think Cameron to come on. The midfield, I've gone with Leupolz, Cuthbert, and the skin. And then up front, I've put Agüero and Lawrence together. I just think Macario needs a bit of a rest. I think Fran. Again, I find she's better coming off the bench. So I think let's see how Lauren and Aggie can do together. I think it just creates so much unpredictability for Liverpool defenders. And when a team is organised and sits back, you need that unpredictability to create the space. And I think you never know what Lauren's going to do. You never know what Aggie's going to do. So having them both up top together, it either could work or not work. But that's why I've got a bit ballsy for this, because why not?
Yeah, well, I think we're at the stage now where, just 3 days after, or 4 days it will be, sorry, since Barcelona, to come back from a huge output of energy is going to be difficult. So I think there's got to be a few changes at least. I mean, Dane, what's your team looking like?
Yeah, I sort of could see Lauren missing out after a bit of a display against Barcelona, which was left us all wanting a hell of a lot more. When you see a hell of a lot of sort of posts on social media saying she goes missing in big games, which is a bit of a worry. But they're thinking that to an extent. I could see like a, I could see I like what sort of 3-4-1-2. You could see a Hampton in goal. The Carter is clearly is superhuman. Maybe a Charles and a Perisal Lawrence on the right side. I'd have Kanrid as a potential right wing back. I like right and what Matt said. I'd have Cuthbert and Ingle in the middle, protecting to release Chankovic. And but I'd still go with Lauren and maybe Beaver Jones. But I'd insist like Beaver Jones is more central. She's very fast. She's getting behind Liverpool. James can come and hit those little pockets with Chankovic. And you got some potential of some good subs coming on, like a good bit of pace. Maybe Parasse actually on the right defence. Oh, that's a Bjorn, yeah, it's I think almost going back to what Matt said 20 minutes ago, I think it's a case where we can be a little bit risky, I think.
Yeah, well, I think we need to be, and that is especially the case with my midfield, because I think actually in the King's Meadow game, sorry, the Stamford Bridge game against Liverpool, although we did beat them 5-1, they did, I think, have a better midfield than us on the day. We just had, big moments in it. Predictions then, not many games left for us to get a prediction right. I know Rich has got one. So he's leading the Went from Oakings Meadow team at the moment. I'm going 3-1. Matt, what's your prediction?
I'm done 4-1.
4-1. Pick up 3 goals there. Could be handy. Especially because Bristol City have been relegated now and they won't have Aspen obviously playing. Dane, what about you?
3-0.
3-0. There we go. Obviously, if we get one right, we'll talk about it on Friday. If not, we won't. That is all we're going to have time for tonight. Dane, hope you enjoyed your day out, regardless of the result, and maybe even considering a chance with the season ticket next year.
Yeah, give up on the men. Yeah, it was, as I said, it was nice seeing Sophie. I hadn't seen, obviously, Sophie at a game at a bleak, quite small, but we had a little chat afterwards. Just seeing some people. Yeah, just sampling the atmosphere. I know it's nothing like it would be at King's Meadow, but we tried. It was a good atmosphere. I thought Chelsea did make some good noise. You could tell the players appreciated it. And yeah. Spectacle at the end of the day wasn't great, but it was nice to be involved to an extent. And may I add that question regarding our charity match on Saturday, that you can get tickets right up until kickoff, but there's no cash on the gate, so it will be card,
Plastic only.
plastic card, phone, whatever. But it's nice to come on. Hopefully people can take some sort of something out of this show and help them heal. But we listen, the season carries on. We've still got a big one to fight for, and hopefully tomorrow we get those 3 points and some 3 goals like me and Matt predicted. Like 3 clear goals would be nice.
Yeah, I do feel a little bit better. I will feel a lot better once the Liverpool game's done and we've won it, hopefully. Matt, I hope you feel the same after getting some things off your chest.
Yeah, it's been a good therapy session, I think, for us all and for everyone listening. And yeah, hopefully we can move on to the Liverpool game, get a good result, and we'll soon forget that. So.
Yeah, now we will be back on Friday to look back at the Liverpool game and look ahead to Emma Hayes' final game at King's Meadow at home to the already relegated Bristol City. We'll be joined by Simon Kingman for that. And now we mentioned Matt Beard episode earlier in the show. If you do want to listen to that, you have to join our Patreon. That's our little way of thanking people for supporting the show. It's £5 a month, so cheaper than a decent pint in London. And it helps support us do things like Mixlr, edit the show and Zoom and stuff like that, which all cost us, well, me, a bit of money anyway. The link for that is patreon.com/WentToMoKingsMeadow. You can also hear the interview with Tony Farmer. There's one with George Michaelas, who was Chelsea coach way back in 2002. And there's one with Paul Lagan, who is a journalist who covers Chelsea, about Emma's time, which was up to the end of last summer. And we'll have some more stuff in the summer for you as well, hopefully. Reviving our My Daughter, the Professional series that we did with Erin Cuthbert's dad, Steve, and Bethany England's mum, Lisa, a couple of years ago. So hopefully some more names added to that. So it's worth, you get something back for signing up, basically, other than giving us your money, which I do feel a bit guilty about. The link for that in the description box. Now, normally I say from King's Meadow to Wembley, keep the blue flag flying high. Since we got knocked out of the FA Cup, I've been saying from King's Meadow to Bilbao. Now we're out of the Champions League. I've got nowhere to go. So I asked for a few suggestions online. I had Sam Hazlitt said from King's Meadow to Corruption. CFC Kelly said from King's Meadow to Leyton Orient. At Women's Ex Football with from King's Meadow to Old Trafford. Kevin with from King's Meadow to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which I like. Hope with just Chow for now. And Sonia Begley, from King's Meadow to Lisbon, which is a long way away, but I like it. But I'm going to go with thanks for listening. Fuck UEFA, fuck Barcelona, and fuck Bon Matty. Keep the blue flag flying.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.